perdido entre tu casa y mi casa será el calor que no habrá.
Hello and welcome back to Accent of Women, a show by and about women from diverse cultures and languages right across the world. My name is Jimena, and today we continue our conversation in part two of Hailstones Fell Without Rain, the Melbourne Lounge. In this episode, I chat with writer Natalia Figueroa Barroso. She's a member of the Sweatshop Literacy Movement, and I'm honored to say that she's also my mentor in Our North is the South, Latin American Storytelling. This is a workshop I'm also part of, and this program gives a voice to writers who share a connection with South America, whether they were born there or have a parent from the region, and who carry a familiarity with its language and culture. Together, we dive deeper into her experience writing in Spanish and how her Charrúa, Yoruba, and Uruguayan heritage shapes her creative voice. Here is Natalia.
It's the same.
That I will keep in secret. Oh, thank you so much for making time after the workshop. I'm gonna keep it brief because the recording I did in your book reading already, like, you talk a little bit about the book and also about what you do. I've been following your interviews and your book reading and the response of the people in our community and also outside our community about your book. And I haven't read it yet. It's in my reading list, but I feel like I'm a bit more familiar with the topics that you write about identity, memory, and migration. So I would like to know today if there were any parts of the book that were healing for you or a bit hard to write.
Yeah. So there's a, I actually survived child domestic violence. I'm surviving. So I always say that I'm like surviving because it's, you know, you never know when there's a trigger and the memory comes back. And in my novel, I do touch on domestic violence. And there is one scene which, was really hard to write. It was a scene where the Grachu defends her friend whose boyfriend was holding her wrist too tight, and then they escape into the car and they leave the place. And that scene was very, very, very hard to write because even though I wasn't the protagonist, I was one of the children in that scene, and it is fictionalized, but there's like lots of truth in it, and it was difficult to write. And many times I was like, should I write this? Like, will the women that were there feel guilty that they made me go through this without, obviously not intentionally, but that's how they're going to feel. They're like, oh, I didn't keep the children safe. So I questioned many times, but then I was like, no, they did the best that they could in a very difficult situation, and I'm sure that they're going to understand that they did the best that they could.
Thank you so much for sharing as well that personal experience. I appreciate that. I'm also a domestic violence survivor. I find myself in my everyday, in how I build my connections with people, my romantic relationships or my friendships. I still see the shadow of this in my everyday But yeah, it's still something that I'm working on. So I really appreciate you opening yourself about that. And also in your book, because, yeah, as an emerging writer, I feel sometimes a bit shy to overshare, but at the same time, I experience a sense of freedom, and it's also like very therapeutical. Do you feel like writing also help you process these experiences?
So, what it did, what helped me process was seeing the moment from all the characters' point of view. So, seeing it from Grachu, which is the mother, and seeing it from Pancha, which is the mum's best friend and the one being abused by her partner. And then seeing it from all the children's point of view. So Pancha's kids, the younger one, the teenage one, seeing it from the as well, Grachu's kids, the teenage one and the younger one, and just getting my head around that moment and understanding fully that everyone did the best that they could. And that was healing, that
Yes.
Everyone just does the best that they could, that they can in difficult situations. So it was healing in that sense, to be able to see it and also fictionalize it. Because I like, as I said, if we were to write things that are just like I 100% agree that memories that stay already hold a naturally a story, and it's perfect to write from that space. But when we fictionalize it, it actually makes it feel like it's more true, because sometimes things that are real, if you're actually telling the autobiographical of it, it's so out of the world, this world, that you're like, no, that couldn't have happened. But it really did. And so when I fictionalize it, I kind of ground it and say, hey, this is the believable side of it.
Yes, I also remember from your book reading and from your interviews that you mentioned that writing in Spanglish, both in Spanish and English, holds a special power. Why do you think this makes it special for you or for telling your story? Does it come naturally to you to write in Spanglish, or do you first like imagine it in English and then in Spanish? Tell me a little bit about your process as well.
So Spanglish for me has been my native language for a long time. So it does feel como que estoy siendo yo, 100% yo, and I feel, yeah, a casa basically. It's also, I feel like because they're two colonial languages, I feel like when I break them, I'm also decolonizing a little bit, like saying, hey, I don't respect your language, that in I'm gonna, create it new. Yeah, we've made new words as well. So like, I don't know if you've come across the word fensa, which is not even a Spanish word, but we've made it up. From fence, like we make English words sound Spanish, and that I think is a form of decolonizing and reclaiming our language, because our ancestors have lost so much, especially my ancestors, my Charrua ancestors, who only now have less than, there's only less than 68 words recorded and handed down. So we were not allowed to speak our language. They will cut the tips of our tongues
Could
if we
you
spoke language.
please share with me some Charrua words that are familiar to you?
Yeah, so the one that I got handed down is Bilu, which it means beautiful, and it's something that we use when we talk to the moon, because we get baptized with the moon. And this is in my novel as well. So we say bilu 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 when we talk to the moon, the full moon, and ask her for protection, to protect our kids especially. And so I do mention this in the novel, and it's something that I inherited from my Afro-Indigenous paternal grandparents. And I always, it's funny because in the Uruguayan education system, they teach you that there's no more charruas, right? That we all just come from the boats. And so when I used to get baptized with the moon and stuff, I just thought, oh, this is just what Uruguayans do. It's just, you know, witchcraft. Like, that's how I used to think of it. Yeah. But then after one day, thank God, there was one white anthropologist who actually wrote down all the charrua words that were kept after the last massacre, and interviewed house servants. So after the last massacre, the women and children were separated and put into house servitude, enslavement. And they were separated on purpose so they couldn't practice culture and speak language. And this white anthropologist recorded the word bilu, and I was like, oh. And then recorded the tradition of presenting your child to the moon. And I was like, oh. I'm like, this is not, you know, brujeria. This is culture. This is my grandparents' way of resisting and keeping culture, even though that it was a risk. It was,
yes.
Yeah.
And I also know that indigenous cultures in South America, they didn't have a written form of communication. Most of it was also information that went from words mouth to mouth. So, yes, it was the white anthropologists who put these sounds into words. I found that fascinating as well. So to give context to our listeners, Natalia comes from a country called Uruguay that is located in South America. Uruguay is a very particular country because it's small, and nowadays, me as a Peruvian person also coming from South America, the perception we have of Uruguay and Argentina is that they are like the Europeans of South America. Now, this is a generalization that is based on massacres and genocides that have occurred during the colonization times to technically eliminate brown and black people or keep them under control. So that is why this knowledge is missed sometimes, or considered as witchery as well, as something evil. But in reality, I feel like it's very strong present in our memory and in the little rituals that are still alive within us. Thank you for sharing that about the moon. I find it fascinating. In Peruvian Inca culture, our god is the sun, but also we have the moon, and both of our prayers, even in my nowadays, I pray to both, and I feel like fully protected with them, even though I'm in Australia, very far from my land.
Yeah, and it's something that I explore in my novel. I explore God in a different way. So, yeah, God is the moon for us.
Oh, that makes me excited to read it. Could you share with me, have you faced any challenge by publishing a bilingual novel in Australia?
So I've been very lucky because I've been part of Sweatshop Literacy Movement since 2018, and they are trying to decolonize the literary landscape in Australia, in so-called Australia. And because of them, it has been easier for me, as opposed to other writers of color who don't have a literacy movement like Sweatshop, because of them, every single piece I have published has been in Spanglish, and well, more than Spanglish. Sometimes I insert every Charrua word that I can into my stories. Yeah, and also, as I haven't told the listeners, my paternal grandparents, who are Afro Charrua, from the north of Uruguay, and so it's with the borders with Brazil, and so they speak Portuñol. So that I add Portuñol into my stories whenever the opportunity arises. Yeah, so I've been quite lucky in that regard, but it is difficult. It is difficult. Just today, I had a little piece published for publicity only, and it was published in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age and Brisbane Times, and it was just about my writing routine. It was like 100 words or something, very, very short. And I wrote it in Spanglish, and they put my Spanish words in italics, which I did not send it off like that. So that just shows just a little bit of how it is everywhere else. We don't put languages other than English into italics anymore, because that others them literally on the page. So we have stopped doing that. But obviously there's still growth from other sectors in the industry. They need to learn not to do that anymore.
Yes. Even myself as an emerging writer, that's something that I'm also learning. And then, you know, like listening to you read in your book, reading, it also made me feel kind of like encouraged to write a bit more in Spanglish and to celebrate that and don't feel embarrassed, because sometimes I feel like I don't want the reader to get lost or that my sentences are misunderstood, you know? But I feel sometimes that is also part of who I am and what reflects like my experience as a migrant. And I think, being that said, do you believe that, what do you think about the Latinx and the migrant representation in the literature here in Australia? Do you think there is much representation or not yet?
No, not enough. But slowly, because of movements like Sweatshop Literacy Movement, I've been privileged to be able to read from the diaspora in the Arab diaspora, Vietnamese, Asian diaspora. I've been able to read from them, all these different diasporas and different experiences. But if it wasn't for them, you'd just go into a bookstore, and unless it's like a indie bookstore, I highly doubt you're going to find Michael Muhammad's Ahmed's The Lebs, or Shirley Lee's Funny Ethnics. There are so many beautiful stories that are coming out of Western Sydney from communities of colour that we would lose if we didn't dig for them, really, because there's not many at the moment. There's not enough, because we are, I think that it's like nearly 50% of Australia or more that
speak other language than English.
Yeah.
Right.
It's definitely more than that.
I think so too. Do you have what do you hope for multilingual writers take from your work?
To be brave and trust their reader. Your reader is smarter than you think. They're able to decode, so like you don't have to translate everything. You can, as Angie Cruz said, cushion the non-English word with English words around it. So guide the reader in a way to understand what that word means, but you don't have to translate it. So, yeah, I hope that I see more of it, because not only will it expand the reader's worldview and learn new words as well, like and yeah, and it's just also like for example, in there's different ways of saying things, and it could and it not only expands your worldview, it also expands your imagination. So like in Uruguay, we say when someone is doing really well or is really good at something, we say anda volando, which means they are flying. And it would be nice to tell someone, hey, you're flying in literature,
yes.
You know, like to change the meaning and make it, you know,
yes.
I think it's beautiful to change the imagery for success, like you're flying. I'm guessing there's, we've got a whole, like, I imagine that if we ask a Vietnamese person, how would you say that someone's successful? They would give you another image and you're just like, oh, and you see that differently. Yeah. So
in Peruvian Spanish, we'll say, la está rompiendo. You're breaking it, like you're breaking barriers, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I find it very interesting that we both speak Espanol. But even though we speak Spanish, like we have like our own ways to say the same thing. I find that beautiful. And
yeah, exactly. And the images are different.
Yes.
But yes, I apologize. I have my dogs here. Mbaku. Oh, no.
Paco.
All the dogs.
His name is Paco.
It's Mbaku.
Ah, Mbaku. Okay.
Which is my son named him after one of the characters from Black Panther.
I thought it was Paco, like my dog.
We've got Umbaku, Mota, and Coco.
Mota and Coco. Oh, that's really nice. I have one last question. Are you working in any community projects at the moment?
Yeah, so at the moment I am actually now I am the director of our North is the South, the Latin American Literary Initiative with Sweatshop. And at the moment we have just under 30 writers from the Latin American diaspora, who are spectacular, by the way. And we will be getting them all published by 2027. So watch this space. And hopefully soon we will have the first Latin American Australian anthology to be published. That's the goal.
So
That's the goal.
Yes, I'm also very excited about that project. Thank you so much, Natalia. It's been a real honor to hear a little more about your journey as a writer. Yes, and I can't wait to start reading your book. Thank you so much for your
time. Thank you.
At Scent of Women is produced in the Melbourne studios of 3CR Community Radio with the support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation and shared nationally via the Community Radio Network. You can listen to this episode and past shows at 3cr.org.au on the At Scent of Women page. If you like what you listen and would like to get in touch, email us at scentofwomen@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and making the space for these important stories.
Negra,
negra que te quiero,
rosa,
negra presuntuosa,
mira
que me estoy muriendo,
dame
vida de tu boca,
bota.
Que me está pisando los talones de la libertad.
esperanza de un cariño adormecido. Yo sabré reír, yo sabré llorar, yo sabré entregarte mi cariño.
Negra,
negra que te quiero,
goza,
negra presuntuosa,
mira
que me estoy muriendo,
dame
vida de tu boca,
bota,
que me está pisando los talones de la libertad.
Negra,
negra que te quiero,
goza,
negra presuntuosa,
mira
que me estoy muriendo,
dame
vida de tu boca,
bota,
vida de tu boca.
Negra,
ay,
negra,
ay, ay, ay,
mentirosa,
dame, dame, dame de tu boca.
Negra,
negra, presuntuosa, negra, mentirosa, negra,
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 mentirosa,
presuntuosa,
presuntuosa.
¿Cuándo